Live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
All right, welcome in, everybody. It is a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. John Osier will be along about an hour from now from Jaguars.com. We'll get into what exactly O does know about why the O yesterday, Tony, 55 pass plays, that six of them resulted in Blake Bortles scrambles, but 55 dropbacks to compare to 12 handoffs to your tailbacks. And when you could, you know, look, 9 carries for 36 yards, those are not eye-popping numbers. It's 4 yards a carry. It's not the worst total in the world. When you combine that with Denard Robinson, the guys had 12 carries for 59 yards. They're averaging, as tailbacks, 5 yards a pop in that football game. And Yeldon on the first drive, what do they have? Catch for 20, catch for 14, right? He only caught 2 more balls the rest of the way. Get the ball in his hands yesterday against a team that has trouble containing tailbacks all season long.
Look, there's a lot that I have to say about what the game plan was yesterday. And look, we've talked about this every week. Whenever the Jaguars lose, there are going to be people complaining about whatever the play calling was, offensively and defensively. And I haven't been hard on Greg Olsen this year because I think he's done a pretty solid job out of this point in 2015. They got to figure out what's going on in the red zone. We all know that. I think that falls a lot on what's going on with their scheme and what they're deciding to do in that part of the field right now. Look, the whole thing against Buffalo, you run the ball 4 times from the 1-yard line. I've said I would have started throwing the ball or put somebody else in there to have a chance on third down. I wouldn't have given Toby 4 carries in that situation, but I understand the mentality of our guys got to be able to get a yard. Right, I understand the mentality of that. This wasn't that kind of situation yesterday. This was, you know, first and goal from the 10. We got to find a way to get 10, and they had no plan to do it. And it's watching from the very beginning of that football game yesterday, not only did they never commit to the run game in that game, when they ran the ball, it was out of shotgun. And I'm watching it going, San Diego is 2-8. In large part because defensively, they can't defend the run. It doesn't matter if they know it's coming, don't know it's coming. You don't have to trick them. You just have to run it at them and be willing to keep running it at them, and you're eventually going to gouge this football team. And the Jaguars came out, they were running Yeldon out a shotgun. They weren't ever putting him in the backfield in a normal look for a running play. It's like they were constantly trying to trick San Diego with what they were doing. There's no need for it. Against that Chargers team, you don't have to fool them. You just have to be willing to commit to running the football. And yesterday, there was none of that. TJ Yeldon had 2 carries in the second half of that football game. 2. Against a team that gives up almost 5 yards a carry. There is no good answer for that.
No, there's not. Especially, I mean, look, you were down 2 scores, but it was not like you were so far out of reach that you felt like you couldn't come back in this football game.
No.
There was plenty of time to develop something, particularly after you stopped San Diego on their opening drive of the second half. You settled down. All right, let's attack this team.
Yep.
Punch them right in the mouth. Never really developed for the Jacksonville Jaguars yesterday.
And I got the first down numbers. We'll get into them here on the other side of this first break. But I broke down the first down numbers for this football team yesterday in the game, and it doesn't make any sense with who they were playing.
Fan feedback spotlight today focuses in on the red zone ineptitude of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Too often settling for field goals instead of punching it in for touchdowns. I mean, way too often. It's those field goals of 25 yards and less are the ones that are so galling to you. You know, I mean, are you kidding me? Now they're shorter than an extra point, and you're just that point blank. You feel like you've got to take advantage of some of those opportunities. Jags haven't been able to do it mostly for the entire season. Yesterday, a case in point. So we ask you today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, what is your best solution for the Jaguars' red zone woes? Now, that's a question that's primarily focused on offense, but they certainly had the red zone woes on defense yesterday, as well as San Diego. What did they convert 4 out of 5 red zone opportunities into touchdowns yesterday? Too many, and the end result is the Jags fall on the scoreboard to the San Diego Chargers and sap the momentum that they had built up with 3 wins in 4 games, including 2 in a row coming into that contest. You want to get in today? 641-1010 is the number. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line if you'd like to participate there. Fan feedback spotlight, you can hop on the text line, or you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony as well, on the Jaguars Today Facebook page is open for business. We'll take your calls coming up. We'll hear some post-game audio from the Jacksonville Jaguars as they try to reassess and put it back together for the final five games of the season coming up. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. We're live at EverBank on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. It's Jaguars today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Real frustrating when you're moving the ball that well, and you know, you keep getting close, but you keep settling for field goals, and I mean, eventually it caught up with us. Really, really frustrating.
That's Stefan Wisniewski, Jaguars center, talking about the frustration that everyone's feeling right now with the red zone woes with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Glad you're along with us. This is hilarious to me. We get this text in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line from the 404 area code, Tony. It says, Mike/Tony, we all need to stop it. This coaching staff is not going to stop what they are doing, period. We keep beating a dead horse with this red zone stuff. I don't understand. What does that mean? We're not supposed to talk about what they failed at yesterday?
And I would respond to you at the 404 that they've changed it every week.
Right.
And just haven't found anything that works.
They went from running Toby Gerhart four times to three consecutive trips into the red zone where they didn't run a single time.
Yeah. I mean, they're changing what they're doing every week. They just can't find success at what they're doing.
Right. And then the answer lies somewhere in between. It seems obvious, right? That it's a balance of run pass.
And it's about matchups. And in yesterday's game, the matchup was run the ball. To go to goal line three times in that game against that defense and not run the ball once. Just it boggles the mind that could even be in Greg Olsen's head that they don't need to run the ball on any of those nine plays. It's just silly. There's no good answer for why that would be the plan against this particular team. Some teams maybe, but against San Diego, I mean, come on, they've been getting gouged, and TJ Yeldon looked like he had a pretty quick step yesterday in that football game as well. Let them run a little bit down there.
Let them run, or I don't know, just throughout the course. Forget just the red zone. Just get the ball into Yeldon's hands yesterday. I would have expected yesterday, Tony, 20 to 25 touches for TJ Yeldon.
Me too.
Between the passing game and the running game. I would have thought
it was pretty easy.
And I thought they came out with that in mind, right? They got the ball to him. I don't care. Screen game, fine. You know, it's like an extended handoff. He got him out there on the edge and let him make some plays with his speed and his ability to make people miss, fine. But they're having trouble containing running backs. Get the ball to your running backs.
He had the 9 carries and 4 catches. So he got 13 touches. I think I saw the snap count this morning from O'Halloran with the Times Union. TJ Yeldon had 57 snaps in that game. So it's not like they were trying to limit his exposure on the football field.
Right.
He was out there for basically the whole game. Denard Robinson got 14, and Alualu was in there for the one play on a 3rd-and-1 where they run the bootleg instead of, again, just run.
Right.
I mean, there's no need to get cute in that situation against this team. There's no need.
Against this team, and that's the key, because there have been situations where we said, look, you're pounding it into the middle of the line. You're not having success. Let's get Blake Bortles on the edge. I don't know if getting Blake Bortles on the edge with Tyson Alualu as his best option out there is your best option to convert that.
It was Alualu and Clay Harbor, I believe.
Right, and both on the same side of the pattern.
And I think Mercedes was the guy that was dragging way behind it. I don't know if he got caught up in the line of scrimmage or not, but it just doesn't make any sense. And I told you I had figured out or went through and taken a look at all the first down plays for this Jaguars offense in yesterday's game, just talking about their non-commitment to the run game yesterday. They had 30 first down plays in the ballgame yesterday. 30. They ran the ball on 8 of those plays. Okay, so they ran the ball 8 times out of 30 first down plays for 64 yards. They had 8 yards per carry on first down. They threw the ball 22 times on first down from wherever it was on the field. 12 out of 22, Blake was for 137 yards and an interception. So he was 6.2 yards per attempt. That means that the passing game led to them having to face 2nd and 10 9 out of 30 times that they had a first down in that game. Why? Well, it doesn't make any sense that would be what they want to do. And they put themselves in 2nd and 10. And I've heard people complaining about the play calling on 2nd and 10, including on the 5th quarter yesterday. And look, I don't think that I would expect if you're trying to catch a team off guard, then you throw on 2nd and 10, right? And yeah, you're probably going to set yourself up in third and 10 if you don't complete that pass, but you might surprise him with a throw on second and 10.
I don't know. You think the NFL tendency is to run more or pass more on second and 10 league wide? Because I would think running would be the more surprising play. Anytime you're in second or third and 10, I would think more teams pass in that circumstance. And I know anecdotally.
Maybe in today's game, I don't know. I'd have to look at that.
That's what I'm talking about, though.
I know they went 5-5 yesterday in the game. They passed 5, they rushed 5 times on 2nd and 10. But when you're getting 8 yards a pop on 1st down, what are you doing? And the 2 times in the game I can remember on 1st down where they just lined up with Blake Bortles under center and handed the ball to whoever was in the backfield, Yeldon got 21 and Denard got 19. Why aren't you doing that?
Right.
I mean, there's just... It's working. That part of it is working, and I get Blake wasn't bad yesterday.
I thought Blake was pretty good yesterday, barring the interception.
So make it even easier on him. Give him the option of play action from time to time by using what is there for you, which would have been the run game if they had ever committed to doing it.
All right, 641-1010, the phone number. If you'd like to get on board, we'll hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles coming up throughout the course of the show. From yesterday's post-game, question of the day is simply this. What can be done, in your opinion, what's the best solution, or what would you like to see tried to fix the red zone woes for the Jacksonville Jaguars? Tweet us, text us, however you want to communicate with us with your responses on that. But right now, let's go to the phone lines. Wes in Green Cove Springs going to lead us off on a Wild West Guns and Gold Money. Good morning, Wes.
Hey, good morning, guys. Enjoying the show as always. Two things. First thing I want to talk about is Andre Branch. On that play where he was offsides, I counted and he took 3 full steps. It was pretty much past the offensive tackle before the offensive tackle for San Diego started getting out of his stance. And Andre Branch still couldn't touch the quarterback. So I really don't even know why he's on the team. I would take a chance on signing a practice squad defensive end off another team. And they probably can't get to the quarterback, but we know for a fact Andre Branch can't get a quarterback, even if he gets 3 steps.
Something else?
Yeah, the second thing was, you know, the insider for San Diego said that team had quit. And going into that game, the first 2 drives the Jaguars had, I actually felt like, man, I said, we're going to win this game for sure. We're going to actually win a game we're supposed to win, because it just seemed like San Diego was like, we're not going to win. And we could pretty much do anything we wanted to do, and the only people that would be able to stop us was our own team, and that's pretty much what happened. We could just run at will, it seemed like, in the first throw to TJ, and they just started dropping back and throwing the ball.
Gotcha. Wes, appreciate it. Look, I felt the same way. If they were able to get it, Tony, if they could have turned that into a double-digit lead early, and it's easy to say now. Who knows what you don't know. The game changes. You could say, well, if they got a touchdown here, look, that would have been the difference in the game. Well, it's not necessarily, because everything changes after that, because you're playing to a different score. But I thought if they could have punched in those first couple of drives and scored touchdowns and been up 14-0 with a team, and we talked about this going into it, West Coast trip, West Coast to East Coast, holiday weekend, team on a 6-game losing streak, just got the snot beat out of them, and they're done. They're not going anywhere, and they know it. You could have taken their heart, taken their will away. Well, give credit to San Diego, because the Jags made it look like a hot knife through butter offensively the first couple of drives they had, except when they got to the red zone. And I think that's what kept San Diego alive. And they finally, on their third drive, said, oh, we can put something together here. Look up, oh, you know what? If we score here, we're actually going to be winning this football game, no matter how it felt. And it felt like the Jags were kicking their ass for the first quarter of the game.
No, it really did. And there was an opportunity there to not only, if you punch those first 2 drives in, you're looking at 14-0. You're looking at 14-0 and having possessed the ball for 10 of the first 12 minutes of that game. I mean, you really had smashed San Diego, who's coming across the country, who's lost 6 straight, who hasn't found any kind of confidence on defense, and you allow a team like that to get into a rhythm with a football team like Jacksonville, who you know, going into the game, this is a team that can't rush the passer right now with 4. They're not very comfortable blitzing, and it's very uncomfortable to blitz a guy like Phillip Rivers. It just is. Whether he can move or not, it's just uncomfortable to do it, because he's seen enough of them that when you start trying to bring pressure, he sees where it's coming from, and he's going to get the ball out of his hands. More times than not, he's going to get the ball out of his hands. So it's a really uncomfortable position for the defense if you're not punching those kind of opportunities in. They didn't. San Diego put a drive together. Phillip Rivers is good, guys. and he found a way to keep his team in it there in that the first quarter of that game, and from there it just kind of ballooned for this Jacksonville team, ending the first half with that pick by Bortles.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk and a lot of focus about the skill position guys being beat up for San Diego. That's not been their major concern. He's always had guys, no matter who he's had to throw to, Philip Rivers has found a way to move the football. The concern has been the offensive line and the fact that you still can't get pressure, and that you basically gave up trying to get pressure in the game, because then they started rushing three all the time because they're afraid of what Philip Rivers is going to do to them on the blitz, because Tony, against a decimated offensive line without two of their current five starters, they've already lost their center.
Yeah.
Previous to this, you know, they've been beat up on the offensive line all year that haven't been able to protect this guy, and he got just absolutely run roughshod last week against Kansas City. I get Kansas City has some good individual pass rush talent, but you got to figure out some way to get after quarterbacks when they have no kind of steady play from their offensive lines.
Well, and I think, look, if you're Jackson, well, we talked about this a little bit. It was a short week last week, obviously, with the Thanksgiving holiday. But we talked about it a little bit last week, especially when Jeff was in here with us last Tuesday, that this game against San Diego, because of the problems they're having on their offensive line, is the type of game where you need your front four to get pressure, right? Like, they need to be good enough against a team that can't pass protect to get pressure with four, because that allows you to take advantage of Philip Rivers at times and his immobility and try to create a turnover or two. When you have to blitz him, you're done. Like, that's what I thought going into the game. I thought if you get in a position where you need to send five or six to get Philip Rivers with this offensive line, he's going to tear you apart. He's going to tear this team apart, and that's what it turned out to be. They couldn't get pressure with the front four. And that was it. That was the ball game defensively for the Jags.
6-4-1-10-10. Let's go back out to the phones. Our buddy Bold City Batman checking in this morning. Good morning, Batman. How are you?
Where art thou, Dante Fowler? We miss you, man. Come on, you ain't even played.
We miss you. We haven't seen you, but we miss you greatly. And please bring help with you.
Bring
friends.
It was, you know, the first two possessions and stuff on both sides of the ball, I thought we played pretty decent football. I mean, it's the first quarter of the game. It's just after they got that first touchdown, man, that kind of threw us out of the ring, man. But you can't play a game when you're going against Philip Rivers. You give him time, he's going to carve you like a turkey. You've got to get pressure on him, man. That's been our fault the whole entire season. Can't get pressure on the quarterback, man. It's kind of crazy, man, and don't see how Audrick's a big scary man. I don't see how he's not causing more havoc in there. But it's just, man, it can't do much whenever you can't put no pressure on him. Your defense can't make plays if he's comfortable.
Yeah. Hey, Batman, we appreciate it, man. Look, to me, the biggest lack of making a play, Tony, we talked about it extensively on the post game yesterday. It's 4th and 7. You rush four, they get stymied, and nobody can break free of the block that's being applied to them to chase down perhaps the most immobile quarterback in the National Football League. He's already had his leg rolled up on in the game. He's not, even for his standard, he's not 100%. And you let Philip Rivers scramble, and no one can come up from the secondary in support and make a play on this guy in the open field, and you let him run for 8 yards, and that was the ball game right there. Because if you stop him right there, you get good field position, you're down by less than a touchdown, you still got a great chance to win that football game. No guarantee that you're going to, but once that first down was converted, and then they, of course, go on to score on that drive, it was over at that point.
Rivers did it twice yesterday. Rivers scrambled for a first down twice in that football game.
But the 4th and 7 was particularly galling.
It was awful, and I don't know who it was. I know they were trying. You heard Gus Bradley after the game on the post game said that they were running a couple games inside on that particular play, and they lost contain on that side. Like, whoever was supposed to cross back over to that side of the field just didn't get there. And whether it's because they got blocked or they got caught up or whatever happened, they didn't get there. And, you know, being up in the booth and watching it, it was like, can he really get there? Like, as soon as I saw everyone get caught in that watch, I was like, there's nothing open downfield. They did a good job in coverage on that play, but it's, can he really get there? And when he took off, I was like, yeah, there's enough space.
Right.
Philip Rivers is going to get 7.5. It's about to happen on this play. And, man, it really was. It was the back-breaking moment of that game. Stevie Johnson with a touchdown a few plays later to extend that lead back out to 31.
Let's go to James on the north side next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, James.
Good morning.
James, take us off speaker, man. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm just having a hard time understanding the Jags coaching philosophy. Like I don't understand. Like, I noticed that one time the Chargers, it was 4th and 7, and they went for it and got it on us. And at times that we won't even go for it on 4th and 1, and yet we're climbing and we're crawling and clawing just to get a wild card spot. I don't understand it.
All right. Well, I mean, look, you're kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place here. When we're talking about you can't punch it in from in close in the red zone, right? Well, what is that a failure of? Oftentimes, short yardage offense, right? You can't get the yard that you need. So I understand the decision to kick field goals rather than not get points at all in a football game. I don't think just because the Jaguars are 4 and 6 coming in the game, they should say, to hell with it. Let's go for it on every fourth down out there. Yeah, Phillip Rivers, that was a calculated decision. At that place on the field, it's 4th and 7. It's a long field goal.
Yeah.
You know, a punt doesn't net you many yards. They put it in the hands of their quarterback, their all-pro quarterback. And he never should have been able to pick up that first down, but he did pick up that first down. I don't think it's a case where I think the Jags should just be going crazy, going for it on fourth down all these times.
No. I thought three of the field goals, I had no issue with them not going for it on the fourth down. The three short field goals, I don't have a problem with those. Maybe you think about it, you know, when you're going to have Myers coming out there to attempt basically a 51, 52-yard field goal, and it's 4th and 1. You know, that's a situation where it's like,
Right.
You know,
sure.
Look, we can think about it there, but that was the only one in the game that
I
thought about it, and he did. He made the field goal. So, I mean, they got points out of that drive. I wouldn't have run the play they ran on third down, as we've already discussed. I didn't have a big issue with how aggressive they were as far as fourth downs yesterday. I have an issue with the play calling outside of that going into the game yesterday. And it's really the first time this year that I've had this kind of problem with Greg Olsen. It really is. But yesterday it made no sense against this team to have the plan
they had. Overall
game
plan didn't make any sense to us. All right, offensively at least. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories, everything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Wild West Guns and Gold promises to meet or beat any gun shop's price in the United States of America. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Guns and Gold. Guns for Jax. That's guns, the number 4, JAX.com is the website, or stop by and see them at South Lane Avenue. Call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Back with more of your calls. We'll hear from Gus Bradley and Blake Bortles coming up as well as visiting with John Osier from Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Yeah, I know. There was opportunities. Like I said earlier, we had some run-pass options. Blake chose to check out of it to get to some other things based on the look they had. So there was a couple times they were called, but to look into more opportunities for him, I can't argue that fact.
You know, that's the thing, Tony. Everybody wants it to be perfectly black and white, right? Like, oh, they're not calling any of this. They're not calling any of that. It's all this guy's fault or all that guy's fault. Fire the coach. Fire the offensive coordinator. The quarterback's an idiot. The offensive line can't block. You pick your poison, but people like to focus in on one thing. Sometimes it is multiple things. As Gus said, there are occasions when you say, how many times have you heard this? When you line up and you look at the defense stacked against a running play, and people are like, why didn't you check out of that, right? Why did you run the ball into the teeth of that defense, which clearly was selling out to stop the run? You knew that was doomed from the start. So they get a look, and it's a run-pass option, and you say, all right, well, this is the look that indicates we're supposed to go with the pass here. This is the better matchup. We talk about it all the time. How come other teams find matchups against us? How come Antonio Gates isolated on Jonathan Cyprian happens and Phillip Rivers can find that? So you try to do that. And if the play is unsuccessful, then it's just one more unsuccessful pass play. It's one more pass play to the pile of 55 pass plays compared to the 12 running back plays. But as Gus said at the end, overall, you really can't argue the point. Even if there are instances of that, and there probably are, overall, you can't argue the point that where's T.J. Yeldon in the red zone? You've got to find a way to get him involved, even if once in a while you say, you know what, we're going to stick with this, even if the look isn't good, because we've got to give the guy we drafted to be the feature back a chance to be the feature back.
Yeah, give him a chance to be the feature back and find a way to get some of the matchups San Diego did. I mean, look, they wound up with not only Cyprian on Gates, which they probably feel like is a win, and it turned into one on one of those touchdown passes, but the Stevie Johnson play, that was Puzzlusny.
Right.
trying to cover Stevie Johnson. How does San Diego get that matchup on the goal line that their fastest, quickest wide receiver is on Paul Posluszny? And that's what they schemed up in that part of the field. The Jaguars have guys that they ought to be able to create mismatches with in that part of the field. With Robinson, Hearns, Julius Thomas, and TJ Yeldon on the field, they ought to be able to scheme up some way to just have somebody that you're like, there it is, that's where I should be going with this football on this play.
Isn't every time Allen Robinson is covered by a guy under 6 feet tall and he's locked up one-on-one, isn't that a mismatch? I mean, isn't that...
It is. That's the fade.
No, but you don't have to throw... Isn't the fade different than the jump ball? Can't you just throw it up to him?
It's kind of the same thing.
Maybe, but it's
kind of the same thing. And that's what they did on the last touchdown. They just threw it up to him. And I think that's a play where Blake has been overthrowing that ball.
That's what I'm talking about, though. That play, to me, is not a fade. That's more of a jump ball. We think of a jump ball being more in between the 20s, right? Like, you're going to throw it downfield, we're just going to throw it up high. The fade, to me, is one where you're trying to beat the guy and catch it to the corner with the guy chasing you to the corner kind of thing. You know what I mean?
I think that's a technicality on that.
Well, maybe it is.
I think Blake hasn't thrown it real well.
I don't think that the pass that Allen Robinson caught the touchdown on, I don't consider that a fade. He beat double coverage. He just threw it up and said, go up there and snatch it out of the air. Maybe it is semantics.
I think that is what they're trying to do. Like, I think that's what the idea of what they're doing when everyone complains about the fade. I think that's the idea of what they're trying to do, and Blake hasn't thrown it particularly well. I think it's the same kind of play that they've been trying to run, and they've had guys that have had opportunities where Blake has missed them or they got caught up at the line of scrimmage. Whatever's happened, that time the ball was where it needed to be.
Here's one from the 904 area code. We'll hear from Gus here momentarily. Let's be honest. We need to start looking at coaching. Things are not going to change until the head coach is replaced. Oh, we're back to this now. Look at the Bears, for example. Fox is making a difference already. If the Jags want to get to the next level, new head coach is needed. You know what? Why did Fox get fired in Denver? I mean, honestly, it's always, you could point to an example of this. Guess what? Denver's winning percentage has gone up since they got rid of John Fox. Maybe they should have held on to John Fox instead of getting rid of John Fox. I mean, or you know what I mean? I mean,
maybe they both made a good decision.
Right. He's an improvement for Chicago. The other guy's an improvement. Kubiak's an improvement in Denver. But you also, there are plenty of examples of new coaches coming in and the team goes the other direction too.
I mean, certainly worked out for Tennessee with Wisenhunt.
I mean, come on.
I mean, look.
We're back to this after one game.
It works or it doesn't.
Right.
And I get that there's still a crowd of fans out there, and we talked about it when the team started winning a little bit there. They won 3 out of 4. That, look, there are some fans that it doesn't matter what happens in the second half of the season. Doesn't matter what happens, Gus Bradley needs to go. For some of the fans out there, that's just, they're set in stone because they've made up their mind on what he is. We've been talking about this for months now, and I'm still on the, if you had to ask me yes or no, should Gus Bradley be here in 2015? I think it's closer to a yes now than it was a month ago, right? But I'm not totally 100% yes, Gus needs to be here in 2016. They got 5 more games to play. And I want to see these 5 games play out and what it looks like in these last 5 games before I make up my mind on whether I think Gus Bradley should be here in 2015. And some fans just aren't going to give him even those 5 games.
Yeah,
they've made up their mind.
That's their prerogative. But I just think it's funny when, you know, when it goes this way. Had a couple of plays gone differently yesterday, is Gus a better head coach?
It's the league.
I know it is, but
it's the league. I mean, we talked about this briefly off air yesterday. That's a San Diego team. Everyone talks about this Jaguars team, and those who want to bash Gus Bradley will say, well, this team could be 1-9 or 2-8 going into that game yesterday. It could have been 1-9 or 2-8. And the other side will say, well, they could have been 7-3 too. And San Diego is the 2-8. Right? I mean, San Diego is a team that has had fourth quarter leads in 7 games this year. They've had opportunities to win games that could have been 6-4, 7-3. They were 2-8. They were the bottom end of the ball bouncing the wrong way, things breaking for them the wrong way in games, not making plays when they need to make plays. That's what it looks like to be at the bottom end of what the Jaguars could be. They're basically in the middle of what they could have been this season at this point. We'll see if they can take advantage. I expect them to play 5 more close games this year. That's my expectation. They need to be winning 3 or 4 of these.
Let's skip ahead to the second Gus cut from his post-game presser yesterday. He was asked if Blake Bortles, in his eyes, has been regressing a little bit of late.
Well, I don't know. I mean, he made some big plays. You know, he made a fourth and seven, makes a critical play, you know, to Julius Thomas. So I see those plays that he's making, those flashes of things, you know, in the red zone. We just got to keep taking a look at it. The plays where he's trying to extend it, I don't know. Maybe we emphasize it so much he's trying to, you know, make a touchdown or get a touchdown down there that, you know, he made a you know, poor decision. But I see him make some of the throws and some of the decision-making that, you know, we're applauding. You know, but just those some critical times, make a plays. Just when we're in that red zone, I think not enough there.
I don't know if it's regressing, Tony, or not growing fast enough, whatever. Because I think he's made he makes the head-scratching turnover. And
yeah,
he's done that. It's not a new phenomenon. It's not like, wow, we got to this portion of the season over the last three games is something that's just cropped up.
No, I don't think so, and I'll go back to a point I made during crosstalk. I think teams adjust to what you are and what you're doing, and they adjust during the season to what's going on with Blake Bortles in this passing game. Look, this is a football team that has shown no willingness to commit to running the football. So if you're going to defend them, you defend pass, and you try that once or twice a game to fool Blake Bortles into making a bad throw. Unfortunately, he still is being fooled into making one or two really bad plays a game. And in that game yesterday, with everything else that went wrong, the interception late in the first half was a killer, killer moment for them, because it goes from 14-9 with the ball to 21-9 going into the half for this Jaguars team. Gus Bradley also talked about the other side of the ball and some of the defensive mistakes they made in that game.
Yeah, the offside penalties where we jumped, you know, especially on third down. You know, we're trying to get off on third down. Sometimes that happens. It's not excusable because it gives them a first down. The one that was big, I thought, was the fourth and seven. There, we changed up coverage. We forced him to hold the ball. He scrambled, and we got in a foot race. We lost contain on it, and they got the first down. I thought that was a critical play in the game.
Here's a good piece of advice that I just saw on the Jaguars Today Facebook page. This one's from Derek Stewart. When asked how did the Jags score in the red zone, he went to his autofill feature on his phone to see if it could help. So he asked, how did the Jaguars score in the red zone? The reply was, try to get a guy who's the best song I've heard that you can be my DD, and I agree with you and your wife and children. So there, yeah. So that nobody has the answer, apparently. At least Siri doesn't at this point in time. All right, we got to take a timeout. We'll come back. This Dayton football, the Honda Drive around the NFL, a Wild West Guns of Gold Money. Plus, we've got tickets to go see the Jacksonville Symphony perform the music of Star Wars coming up. So, yes, listen, don't play that again unless you mean it now. When you hear Chewy, the next time you hear Chewy, be the third caller at 641-1010, and we'll give you, what are we giving away, Tyler? A pair of tickets, four pack of tickets, what do we have?
Oh yeah,
exactly?
It's a pair to the Jacksonville Symphony, December 3rd, the music of Star Wars, jacksymphony.org.
Coming up on Thursday night, jacksymphony.org for more details if you want to go. If I wasn't working, I'd probably take my kid there because that's probably the music he cares about the most. He sings it, or I guess doesn't sing it isn't the proper way, but he hums it around the house nonstop, over and over. Over and over. Oh, but I love it. It's okay. I love it. All right. This Dayton football, the Honda Drive around the NFL. Coming up next, it's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. On this date, November 30th, 1987, L.A. Raider running back Bo Jackson ran for 221 yards in just his fifth career NFL game. The Raiders knocked off Seattle 37-14. Bo had scoring runs of 91 and 2 yards, added a 14-yard touchdown catch. Did you know, Tony, he did it on his birthday. Happy birthday, Bo Jackson.
How about that?
That's pretty good timing right there.
And the legend grows.
Bo was born on this date in 1962, so happy 53rd. How many career home runs for Bo Jackson, Tony? What do you got?
I do not know.
Take a guess. Come on. Take a stab.
115.
141. Not bad. It's kind of ballparkish. I'll give you on that one. Born on this date in 1931, passing away in 2007. Bill Walsh, NFL head coach, a longtime coach of the 49ers, lived to be 70. 75 years old. Also born in this date in 1969, Larry Brown, MVP of Super Bowl 30 with a couple of interceptions against the Pittsburgh Steelers for the Dallas Cowboys. He turns 46 today. Former Jaguar Marcellus Wiley, that dude, turns 41. And Aaron Kampman, likewise a former Jaguar, only 36 years old for Kampman. But knee injuries obviously shortening his career considerably. This date in football brought to you by Bob Roberts First Coast Roofing. If you have issues with your roof or you want to make sure that you don't, for your home, for your place of business, call Bob Roberts at 287-7756. License number CCC056797 for First Coast Roofing, presenting this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
There were a couple of scary moments for two of the better tight ends in the league yesterday. Seattle Seahawks tight end Jimmy Graham went down in the end zone during the fourth quarter of Seattle's win over Pittsburgh, clutching at his right knee. Graham has reportedly torn the patellar tendon in that knee, which is the same injury that Giants wide receiver Victor Cruz suffered last season. Doctors say that it's about 6 weeks after surgery before someone with this injury can even bend their knee. It's another 6 months until they can run again. Last night, New England Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski also suffered what looked to be an apparent knee injury in their loss to Denver. Gronk was writhing on the field after leg-whipping a Broncos defender and appearing to suffer some sort of knee injury. There were reports out last night that it was believed that he had torn his ACL, but those preliminary reports have changed. Adam Schefter reported this morning that Gronk will be going in for an MRI sometime today, and he has been told by a source, quote, "We think he's going to be okay," so still awaiting word on what exactly is going on with Gronk. And the Miami Dolphins have fired offensive coordinator Bill Lazor, and have promoted quarterbacks coach Zach Taylor to fill that position. A quick note for the we should have fired Gus Bradley crowd because of how well the Dolphins responded to Dan Campbell when he took over as head coach. Since starting red hot 2-0 under Campbell, the Dolphins have lost four out of their last five, with their only win coming over that currently ice-cold Philadelphia Eagles team a couple weeks ago, 20-19. So I'd say overall it hasn't worked out all that well for Miami.
Even without anyone whose names the general public knows to catch passes, Tom Brady will throw for 29 touchdowns against Philadelphia next week, I predict. 29, Tony. That will set the league record for a single game. That's a bad secondary right now.
It's a bad secondary.
They look like they've quit. Hey, coming up, pretty cool event Friday night here in Jacksonville with the Jamaican national rugby team coming in to take on the United States national rugby team. This is the full squad.
Yeah, okay? I've been looking forward to this for months.
This is a big deal on Friday night. They're trying to qualify for a spot in the 2017 Rugby League World Cup in Australia, New Zealand, and Papua New Guinea? John Osher,
Papua New Guinea. I think it's just Papua New Guinea. Yeah.
You've never been there, so it doesn't really. I'm not talking about you. I mean, generally, the people listening have not been there, so it's in a land far, far away on the other side of the world. But the United States national team, is going to be here. This is the highest level of rugby league played in the world. The true national teams, the United States, Canada, and Jamaica will be here over the next several weeks. And the USA plays Jamaica this Friday night. They'll play Canada in a couple of weeks as well. We'll be giving away tickets the rest of the week here on Jaguars Today, but you can pre-purchase tickets at 10 local area firehouse sublocations, or you can do it online by going to jaxaxe.com, J-A-X-A-X-E. $10 for general admission, $15 for special seating with in-seat concession service. Kids 12 and under, as always, are free. The official name of the event, the Firehouse Subs Rugby League World Cup Qualifiers. And so this Friday at Hodges Stadium out at UNF, at 7 o'clock, USA versus Jamaica. They'll play in DeLand at Speck Martin Stadium, where had I played high school football, I would have toiled, Tony, although we did have our baseball practices there when I was in Babe Ruth League. That will be the Canada-Jamaica matchup. And then back here in Jacksonville, I think it's Saturday, December 12th at 3 o'clock at Hodges for the United States versus Canada. It's going to be a big deal.
No, I'm very much looking forward to it. And the I've watched the Rugby Union, Rugby League, and Rugby Sevens. Rugby Sevens is going to be in the Olympics coming up next year, but Rugby League by far is my favorite of the codes of rugby. It's you get the physicality of the rugby game, and you do have some space for some guys to move around. It's a lot more like watching a football game than a lot of the other rugby is. And look, the Axemen have been great for this community, and what Spinner's done with those guys has been unbelievable. But the opportunity now for fans of this community to check out. This is the USA national
team. This is not like a little few satellite guys who are trying to make the team. This is the full squad.
And this is it.
Yeah.
This decides who's going to go to the World Cup, what's coming up here in the next couple of weeks here in Jacksonville and the North Florida area. So it's a really cool opportunity for fans in this area to check out some world-class rugby.
Always a very cool opportunity to spend a few quality moments or maybe the rest of the program, even if we're lucky enough, with John Osier, senior writer for Jaguars.com. Hello, Johnny.
Where's the rugby team staying?
Well, you know what?
I'm not sure.
I'm not sure, but I think they do have sponsored hotels that actually...
I think I'll have a couple of pops and go start a little something.
Would you start a little fracas, maybe?
That's always a good plan.
Start it with them, or
I'm
maybe...
I'm guessing you're going to lose.
I would go in and find out where the Team USA is staying, and I would just drape myself in the red, white, and blue.
Get on their side?
Yeah, kind of get on their side. If you want to pick something with somebody else, as long as you've got them backing you, you'll probably be okay.
I tell you, when we were in London, it shows you... Sometimes in the States, you sort of believe that your world is the entire world. When we were in London this year, the Rugby World Cup was going on, if I'm not mistaken. And the passion of the fans of the nations that are into rugby is off the chart. It's a soccer level.
It's funny you say that because when we went last year, I didn't go this year, obviously, on the trip, but when we went last year, we were there the whole week, and I did two shows for Sirius on Friday night at a London station all the way across London, and it was, you know, pretty late night, but it's the weekend of the Jaguars-Dallas game coming up. They've got the big fan fest coming up at Wembley the very next day, and so I was in their studios for about an hour prior to my two shows going on, not a word about anything, but it was probably 90% soccer, 10% rugby, nothing else even mentioned.
Yeah, and so. I was eating lunch, I guess it was a Saturday, we were over there, and, you know, I was downtown waiting for some people, and as the All Black team was getting ready to play, and, you know, me, the stupid American, you know, kind of watching, you know, and all of a sudden, the pub starts filling up. And they're ready now.
It became an event.
Yeah, when that All Black team starts playing.
No doubt.
I guess they're from New Zealand, correct?
Yes. Zealand All Blacks.
Hardcore. I mean, there was this family with some little kids, you know, and the little kids were scary.
Have you ever seen the meme of the soccer kid with the middle finger?
So it was neat. I mean, there's absolute... passion for it. So anyway,
John, they have a commercial on many digital cable services called the Red Zone Channel, which features highlights. They go to games.
Any tips?
They show you what's going to happen because typically that seems to be the area where a lot of touchdowns are scored around the National Football League. Obviously, yesterday was a struggle for the Jags early in the red zone and squandered opportunities to get some touchdowns, settled for field goals, and really left San Diego feeling like, hey, no big deal. We haven't done anything. We're right here in this football game.
Well, and it's interesting. We talked about it all week. It was the main theme leading into the game. I must have written it, you know, I felt like 100 times. And usually your pregame themes don't work out, frankly. You know, because the NFL, it everything changes. It's weird. But boy, as soon as they got in that red zone and kick that first field goal, you started thinking, boy, is this going to be one of those games where we've all seen it in the NFL because it happens all the time because most offenses can function at some point in the game. You see it all the time where a team gets a couple field goals early. They've been dominant on offense, which the Jaguars were until they got to the 10-yard line. And you just knew when it was 6-0 and Phillip Rivers was on the other side, you knew they were in for a long day.
You didn't do enough to build
and
yourself a
lead. I heard you guys talking about it. I had the exact same feeling. If they get up 14-0 or even 10-0, you get the feeling that's a different game.
But you can't know for sure, but you certainly to see how it would
play. History, watching it shows, you know, tells you that. But, you know, we've all seen it a million times. When you have opportunities early and don't get them, you can survive that if the quarterback on the other side is not a top 10, top 12 guy. If you do that against a quarterback who's really, really good, which Rivers is, you just feel like it's going to cost you. And it did. I've covered very few games where I felt like the entire story of the game was based on that one statistic. But yesterday I thought that was it.
Let's get into a little bit more with you coming up. You're going to stick around for a little bit? We got some callers on the line, so we'll get to you guys if you're there. If you want to hang on through the break, we'll take you coming out on the other side. And we'll get into things with John Osier, the senior writer from Jaguars.com. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. It is a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday. Jaguars Today will continue in a moment live from Everbank here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, John Osher, senior writer for Jaguars.com here with you, Jaguars Today on this Monday morning on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I want to bring up a quote from Roddy White following yesterday's Falcons loss yesterday, because I think it's instructive of how I look at certain situations on this football team. There was a question after the game. Matt Ryan's been struggling greatly this year, playing bad football. Threw another end zone interception yesterday, just bad. So there's been speculation about possibly benching Matt Ryan. Roddy White's reply was, who else are you going to put in there? That's going to be our quarterback forever. This isn't ever going to ever happen. All that speculation, you might want to kill that. We're just going to play better, so let's nip that in the bud. Now, Matt Ryan is certainly more accomplished in what he has done in many cases than the guys I'm going to cite, but people are, I'm getting a lot of it on Twitter, the text line, John, the Boss's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, that, you know, Gus Bradley, here's why Gus needs to be fired, because he keeps playing Chris Clements. He preaches competition, yet he keeps playing Chris Clements. My guess is he does preach competition, and he watches practice where the competition takes place. And he says Clemens and Branch, as unpalatable as they may be to the Jaguar fan base as a whole, are the best options we have to play this many snaps when you consider, and I know Ryan Davis' name always gets brought up, but the question is, can Ryan Davis hold up against the run, and what is his role on special teams, and how much do you impact from that? And people will say, well,
yeah, I think it's more the former.
The holding up against the run.
But when you listen to them talk about it, they talk about the latter more.
They do mention it. So that's why I'm saying there are multiple reasons. But it's my guess.
I wouldn't have him. I would not have him covering the tight end.
But you know, people say, why is this guy? This guy continues to get beat. Well, if you feel like the option behind him is even worse,
right?
I mean, what do you do? And people say, well, it's pick someone off the street.
No.
They're constantly combing through the available players. They know who's out there. They have guys in for workouts. They have a practice squad. If they thought there was a better alternative, why wouldn't they make that move? To me, I'm asking what I think is a rhetorical question. I think the answer is they obviously would make that move.
Right. Yeah, and we can discuss that nine ways to Sunday, but that's... They're not going to play guys that they don't believe are the best players. Now, are they wrong? I don't know. I believe they're right in terms of the Ryan Davis situation. I don't necessarily believe that he's a first and second down Leo. He's been very good in the lightning package and has gotten some pressure in the lightning package. And I think that's what they believe he is.
Right. He's a situational pass rusher.
Yeah.
Is what they believe he is.
And that's okay. But what they need in the pass rush is on the sidelines right now, and they're both on IR.
Understood.
Derek Marks and Dante Fowler are the guys that aren't in that, my goodness, how much would they help the pass rush right now?
Well, you would certainly think a bunch, right?
Yeah.
But again, coming back to these guys in particular, and Grotz is another name that gets brought up, they're... Do you think they want to lose? I mean, do you really think they're saying, you know...
Well, McCray was in for a while, and McCray made the same sort of play.
He did.
Both of the guys, they're hard workers. They're in the right position a lot. But Colvin and House are playing because they have a knack for the ball that Grotz and McCray have not shown in the time that they've been on the field here.
Let's go to some phone calls here. John Osier here with us on Jaguars Today. We'll start with Mike in Bay Meadows. Mike, you're on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
First, I enjoy the show, and I like hearing you guys. But I guess my anger comes from my fear from the whole day. I'm tired of hearing about how great Blake Bortles is doing. That was a divisional game. You're playing for the league. He needs to put his big boy pants on and come to play, but you can count on that mistake that's going to kill you. I mean, how many other quarterbacks have you seen? You may go a yard past the line of scrimmage. You don't go 3 yards past the line of scrimmage, much less twice in one game. This is either his fault or Greg Olsen's fault. Give Gus another year, but these two clowns need to wake up and get it in the red zone. It just drives me crazy, Scott. I keep hearing you guys say how great Blake Bortles is doing, right? He's throwing the ball. That's great. But mentally, he's just like a kid, like, gee, I'm happy to be here.
That I disagree with. I mean, I don't know where you get mentally. He's just, I'm a kid who's happy to be here. When we say he's doing great, I feel like I have this conversation with the listening audience every freaking week. People hear what they want to hear.
Forehead's getting ready.
do you really think we just sit here every week and say, Blake is freaking great. This guy is just throwing around unbelievable. I thought he played for the most part. Yeah, running across the line of scrimmage is inexplicable. To do it twice by as far as he did. Absolutely. Do those plays cost him the game? No, because, he could have tucked the one. Does he make it in? Maybe not. He's not going to make it in on the second one, so it cost him a little yardage. They still make the kick. It didn't cost him anything. Yes, they're mental errors, but those weren't crippling mental errors. The interception was a bad interception. Again,
I don't know if the interception was a bad
interception. I absolutely
think it was. That was a pretty good play by Teo. I mean,
Do you not see him there? He's right there. All he had to do was stick his left arm out.
I had less of an issue with that interception than I had with a lot of the interceptions he's thrown this year, because I didn't think it was necessarily one where he looked at it and decided to make the wrong throw anyway, which I thought he's done a couple of times. On that one, he didn't see it.
Right. Well, that happens either you don't see, he either right. didn't see him, or he saw him and didn't recognize how close he was to the flight path of the ball. I mean, I don't think that was a good. To me, I don't know how many interceptions are good interceptions, but right. when you throw one into tight one-on-one coverage and the other guy out. Mm-hmm. Bites your guy for the football, that's going to happen. This one was
he hadn't
one,
had that many of those, though.
That's what I'm saying. Right. Those are the ones you can live with. Right. He has the inexplicable ones, like, how did you not see that there? I didn't think. But, again, we're focusing on that one play.
I had much more of an issue with the decision-making in the red zone.
To get out of the run plays.
Yeah, that and not seeing the aid in coverage and not having an answer for that, I thought was much more of a story of the game for Bortles than the interception was. Now, obviously, the interception was part of a time where it felt like the wheels were coming off. And, again, you can't have that situation because all of a sudden you're down by double digits and it completely changed the dynamic of the game. But where he's got to grow and where he's got to improve, I don't know if it happens this year, but at some point if he's going to reach the level that this team wants him to, he has to have better recognition than it sounds like he had in the red zone yesterday.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, John. Like, I know from in the press box, at least watching the play with the Teo interception, that my initial reaction watching the play was, what a grab by Teo, because I right. thought there was a lot of space behind it. I haven't seen the TV replay to see how bad the angle might have been for Blake. I don't know, because I haven't seen that. I know in the stadium, when he let it go, I was like, that could be a big play, and then Teo made a huge play.
You never want to pick, right. But that one didn't bother me as much as a lot of them earlier this season, and I guess maybe I was so focused on the red zone stuff yesterday that I didn't think about the interception as much as I had the red zone stuff, which was just the first three series down there. It just seemed like he didn't know what he was seeing, and you hope that that goes away as he gets more experience.
Look, to me, again, we can go back and forth on this all day, but to me, you can't throw that pick in that circumstance when San Diego has momentum and you set him up right. on your side of the field. I don't care if it was a great play or not. All Teo had to do was that was a great play that he caught it. But it was right within. He didn't have to lay out for it. He stuck his left arm out and it basically tipped it to himself. And either you're not seeing that guy sitting there, or you're not throwing the ball you're expecting to throw, or something is happening. But he cannot make that play. But regardless, look, again, to boil it all down, and I'm not saying that you can't critique Blake Bortles, but this idea that Blake is killing you. Yeah, those mistakes are critical and they're killing you. Are we just going to forget the 329 yards worth of passing that he did? I mean, does anyone have a pair of eyes, and can they not see how much better they are at the quarterback position than they've been in a long, long time with this football team?
I think what we're in is we're in the second step of what will eventually be seen as a multi-step process. last year was just at times really, really bad for Bortles. This year, they're doing the things on offense that young, talented players do. They're moving between the 20s, and they're stalling in the red zone. The next step has to be red zone offense. So you assume, because there was a good step made this year, that the next step will be made. But it hasn't happened yet. So,
no, I'm not. Look, I'm not assuming
anything.
And
that's where, you know, I don't think anybody's saying that the mistakes that he has made are not really, really costing the team. They are critical errors, and they're a big reason why it's not a 500 team right now. But to think that there's not, to think that he hasn't shown that he's developing to somebody who will eventually move past this, I don't think is correct.
What the sum total of the positive that he brings compared to the negative that he brings is, to me, overwhelmingly in favor of the positive. He's going to set or approach every significant single season passing mark
right.
for this franchise.
Right. Now, if he, and exactly right, and if he's still doing things, if we're still sitting here the Monday after Thanksgiving next year, and there is a complete body of work where there's the key errors that cost you so many games next year, then I think that's a little different. He has to develop through this. But he hasn't done anything yet to make me think that he won't.
Right.
Is that fair?
Yeah, I think, right. Let's move off the point. Let's go to Desmond up next here. 641-1010 is the number. Good morning, Desmond.
Hey, how are y'all?
Good.
John, I have a question. I just want to know, is, like, Blake Bortles, is his vision is kind of off or what? Because yesterday in North End Zone, we were spacing towards me and the people around, he missed Mercedes Lewis wide open on the crossing route. I guess he was trying to hurry up and throw it because he thought the pressure was on him. But he had so much time in the pocket to let the play develop and see Mercedes Lewis come wide open in the pocket, and that could have been a touchdown. Now, okay, my statement I have to say is that, you know, as fans, as we leave out the stadium, as fans, we are tired of saying, well, maybe next year. And I understand we're a young team, and I understand Blake Bortles. I guess this couple of games this year marked his first full season, which is understandable.
Right.
I don't think we should get rid of Gus Bradley or Greg Olsen, because we finally need a coordinator that Blake can grow up with. Even though we have some everybody scratch their head about play calling, but this summer down, let's get a full complete season next year and see what we're gonna do. Cause I feel like we can go 10-6 next year with no problem.
Sounds like he wants to win, Mike.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and I'm not dismissing what he said. It's exactly the emotion that I think a lot of fans feel right now. Is okay, we see that there are some good things, but man, why are they still losing these? Why are they still losing these games? And I believe it's still offensive inexperience, which showed up in the red zone. And when you can't affect the quarterback, it's very hard to beat good ones. And if you think about it, in the entire era of this of the Gus Bradley era, they've really beaten one good quarterback, which is Eli Manning. And you know, there's always debate if he's elite
Eli
or not.
Swings.
Yeah, but if you think about that game,
they
got a lot of pressure in that game with four. It was one of their best pass rushing games, and they caused a lot of mistakes. When you can't affect the quarterback, you're going to have trouble beating good ones. I thought that showed up yesterday.
All right, let's go to Terrence up next here on 1010XL. Good morning, Terrence.
Hey, Mike. John Hill.
What's up? And we're good. We even played your bell for you.
I heard it. Mike, I got three solutions to the red zone.
Oh, good. We need solutions.
Okay, now you're going to let me say all three. Can I say all three before you?
Well, it depends on how crazy the first two are, Terrence.
Okay, I'm gonna do the one that y'all might hang up on me on the third one. So I'm going to do that.
All right, that's good. That's a good plan, Terrence.
Good plan.
Yes.
Good game plan.
Okay, so the first one. I think they need to use more of the end zone, get themselves more room in the end zone, still wise, because I saw San Diego do that yesterday, versus trying to keep doing that fade. Use the end zone, get yourself more area to work with. Number two, if you're struggling in the red zone, then score before you get in the red zone. I think that Buffalo touchdown to her, I think that was right outside the red zone.
So, well, the one to Thomas yesterday, it was 21 yards. So they're, by definition, just outside the red zone. So there you have it.
Yeah, and the last one. We might want to start something new and go to the two-quarterback thing. Use Blake from 20 to 20 and put Chad in there from 20 on in.
Yeah, all right, Terrence, you have a good day now, buddy.
Okay, buddy. See y'all later.
See you, but even Terrence is laughing at himself, I think, on that last one there. You know, like, and I think that's been a common refrain yesterday. Hey, let's just score. Let's throw it from the 30 or the 25. And I get that. You know, you're stretching the field. You're making more explosive plays. As you said, Blake's decision making needs to get better. The play call mix, I didn't think was particularly great yesterday. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't see much of TJ Yeldon down there. And whatever it is, maybe part of it's probably the offensive line, you know, not blowing people off the ball, which, you know, this is a team, John, that said all off season, we want to run the ball even when you know it's coming.
Yeah, I don't think there's not that many teams who get to the 13-yard line or wherever they were and say, okay, we're going to manhandle it into the end zone.
I'm talking about from the two.
Right, here. Well, yesterday, I'm not sure there were that many opportunities from the two. That was earlier in, you know, last week you couldn't get in from the two.
But that's part of their ongoing struggles.
Absolutely.
In the red zone. That's
Absolutely.
What I'm saying here.
And I thought maybe yesterday that kind of got them in no man's land a little bit, that they never really got to that two where they were going to say, okay, we're using TJ in short yardage here.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was pretty telling when Gus said that Blake checked out of three pass run options to a pass in the red zone. And I think, again, that sort of goes back to the recognition issue of not really knowing exactly what needed to be called at that time. San Diego was showing a heavier front and then dropped eight. And it seemed, I think there were four 4-yard passes in those first nine plays. It just seemed like he didn't have the answer for that 8-man drop, and that really, really cost them. And in terms of running Yeldon the whole game, I heard you talking this morning, Tony. He had a really good run early, and then I had tweeted out a stat where I think after his first run, they had like 8 yards on 6 carries.
They had a run there where it wasn't great.
And then
you have to stick with it,
right,
though?
And that's my point. I think at that point, Blake said something in the press conference about, well, you got to go with what's working. And you do wonder if they went away from that a little bit too early, and that was subconsciously in the back of his mind once they got to the red zone of, hey, this isn't working. And I know it's a lot of psychobabble analysis. You can't figure out what, you know, on a split-second decision, I don't know what plays into it or if he just thought he had the right read. But yesterday, that element certainly hurt once you were in the red zone.
Right, and I think, you know, it's one thing to say let's stick with it against the Jets who are really good against the run. This is San Diego who's terrible against the run.
Right.
You figure if you just are a little bit patient with it and you stay with it, at some point you're going to pop some more of those 21-yard runs.
And it may have had to come in that situation where they sent him in with a play and said, look, you are running the ball here.
And for that matter, hey, that swing pass looked pretty good too. And the little dump-offs to T.J. Yeldon very early in the game.
And I thought Fred Taylor made a great point on the postgame yesterday too of they're not using anything in the middle of the field, which Terrence just pointed out. Why not a slip screen something towards the middle of the field, because they're not using it in red zone right now.
All right, we got a break. We'll come back. Fan feedback spotlight today asked you, as has been the theme of the show all morning, what is your best solution for the red zone woes for the Jacksonville Jaguars? It's brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. We'll get to that coming up on a Wild West Guns of Gold Monday with John Osier, with Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today continues in a moment on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
Not that it has any kind of direct impact on the Jacksonville Jaguars, but USC has decided to take the interim tag off of their interim coach and keep him around the rest of the way. Clay Helton has gone 5-2 since taking over for Steve Sarkisian, who personal issues got the better of him. A lot of people thought Chip Kelly would be headed out there. Apparently, according to Pro Football Talk, they made a call to Jack Del Rio, who said thanks but no thanks. And so there you have it. You know, anytime USC's job comes up, Jack's name gets thrown out there.
Yeah, I would have thought. I mean, he's in his first year at Oakland, right?
Jack? Correct.
I would have thought it'd been a good fit for Jack. But first year on the job,
First year on the job, but I mean, it's your alma mater. I think a lot of people can understand if you go take your job at your alma mater. Mm-hmm. You know, how many times is that particular job going to come open? Maybe the only opportunity you ever get. Is there ever a perfect time? Maybe he's just an NFL guy, too. Yeah. You know what? We try to project what we think Jack would like.
Right.
Maybe he's just happy doing the NFL thing. I mean, it's not easy to get an NFL head coaching gig, and he's got it for the second time around. And, you know, they've only won 5 games this year, but most people think they're headed in a upwardly mobile direction.
They look like it.
All right. Let me get Steve in Mandarin here before we go to some of the fan feedback spotlight today. Is Steve the next one up, Tyler, or am I skipping somebody here? Craig.
Hey, buddy.
Okay. Oh, Craig. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Good, buddy. Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. Everybody beats up on Blake when the guy makes a mistake. There's 53 men on that team. All 53 of those men are making mistakes every game. You win as a team, you lose as a team. Yeah, Blake makes some mistakes, but there's some really high-caliber, very valuable quarterbacks, Hall of Fame quarterbacks in the NFL that are still making those kind of mistakes in every game. Absolutely, our red zone issues are hurting us, and they're going to continue to hurt us until he gets more experience and gets more weapons. I do have one other comment I'd like to make, and that is that I'm surprised no one's talking about. Sitting in the weeds is Doug Marrone. That guy was a pretty successful quarterback in Buffalo, was he not?
Quarterback?
Pretty successful coach at Buffalo, was he not? And he's sitting in the weeds. I'm surprised I would not be surprised if after the offseason that Shad Khan brings him in as the interim coach while they look for another coach or make him the head coach. I thought he did pretty good up in Buffalo.
I would be, I don't know this. Shad Khan's going to evaluate at the end of the year, and who knows? What if they get blown out 5 straight times? Anything can change. My sense is, you're not making any changes. I don't think there's going to be a head coaching change this offseason. Now, again, that could be played out over the last 5 weeks of the season. But trust me, Doug Marrone's name has been brought up plenty of times.
Yeah.
Ever since he got hired, quite frankly, people have said, oh, now they've got a guy with some head coaching experience in their back pocket if things go south. So,
yeah, I never say never, but I don't expect that.
I don't either. All right, fan feedback spotlight. But thank you for the call, Steve. Appreciate the opinion nonetheless. Doug Marrone, let me see here. His record, 6-10, 9-7 in his 2 years in Buffalo. So, I mean, 9-7 is a pretty good record.
You know,
it's an upward trajectory, to be sure.
Not to go completely off subject, but again, to go completely
Feel
off
free.
Subject.
You want to talk about Florida State?
Sorry. I'm sure you do.
I think I've held my tongue very well this morning.
Not insignificant in the grand scheme of things that Julius Thomas looks like Julius Thomas yesterday.
Which, honestly, the hand-wringing, teeth-gnashing about, Julius Thomas stinks, we got to get rid of this guy, we overpaid him.
It was free agents sometimes don't work out.
I understand that.
And it was a struggle, and it is a very positive thing that it now looks like you've got 3 guys at the skill positions that you know you can depend on.
My point being, receivers. You could start out 5 games of anybody.
I get it, but
is a little much to overreact.
But it's still good to see.
Oh, no, no question
and
about it. But it's
you
not
could
unexpected
tell yesterday.
To me. I expect him to have more of those games. Not every week, but I expect him to be more of a big-time factor like that.
Even more than the touchdown, the 11-yard catch on 3rd and 6 that sort of led to the touchdown.
Where he just went up and out-muscled, basically, for the ball.
And that's what he can really give you.
Yeah. Look, the touchdown's good, too.
Speaking of the 3 skill guys, any update on Hearns? I know he was out of the hospital last night.
And it's a very good thing because it's always, no matter who it is, it's always scary. When you see a kid like Allen Hearns, who we all know is a good kid, who is sort of starting to help define this franchise, to see him down like that, you really hate. I'd be surprised, I'm not getting this from anywhere, but I'd be surprised if he plays Sunday. Just with that sort of exit, it would be surprising. But it sounds like he's going to be okay.
The fan feedback spotlight, Tony, let's get to start. Tyler, by the way, did we give away the tickets to the symphony?
Oh, yeah. Randall was our winner.
Good job, Randall, for paying attention there. We only plugged it once or twice, but Chewy was your cue.
You should give away Symphony tickets and rugby tickets to the same person and just let him just go all out all weekend.
Why not? You suggest that would be an odd combo. I've been to the Jacksonville Symphony. They're phenomenal. And I've been to Axemen rugby games. I've never been to the United States world team or the United States national team coming here, but I like them both. Is there some suggestion that...
You're a touch more cultured than the rest of us.
Stop it. Stop it. All right, moving along. Fan feedback spotlight. What is your best suggestion to get the Jags going in the red zone, Tony? What'd we get?
Oh, prepare yourself. From Harold, have players take a knee at the 21-yard line. Hashtag dead zone. From Robert, throw jump balls to A-Rob every down. And I don't know, at least give it to Yeldon twice down there. From Jeff, throw the ball before reaching the line of scrimmage. From Jags fan, find a new coach. From Eric, not seeing enough sweet plays or tight ends swinging out, open up play calling down there. From Chris, a little unfair, Toby and Denard only got 3 tries in a row at goal line. Give them 4. From Daniel, stop, fade, pass, quick slants to the middle of the field and put A-Rob in slot for red zone plays. From Matt, run the ball and set up more play action and quarterback bootleg options if the pass isn't there. He bootlegged twice yesterday at least and then threw the ball past the line of scrimmage. From Colby, read option. And from Demetrius, commitment to the run game. You don't draft a 3-down back in the second round for him to only split carries in crunch time.
All right, Johnny, what's the solution? Fix it for us, please.
Well, I don't necessarily mind the read option idea. It's interesting. Blake very, very seldom has kept on the read option this year. And you wonder if that's not sort of a concerted effort to, hey, I'm going to take fewer hits, maybe more of a dropback guy.
Which maybe, they probably want him to.
And in the long term, I definitely do too. That might work a little bit. I think overall, it's just got to come with better recognition down there and more experience. And that's a tough answer because you want results right away. But I just think it's going to be a process.
The process.
I know. And I wish I could tell you, yeah, if they ran more fade plays, that would work. Or if they ran more of this, that would work.
And that's the thing.
It's not that easy.
Right. There's no one extreme answer. This, and that's it, right? You got to have a little bit better here, yeah. A little bit better here, a little bit better here. And it is, nobody wants to hear that. And that's fine. That's your prerogative if you don't want to hear it. But I think it's our job to point out what we think are the actual things going on. And usually it doesn't boil down to one overly simplistic answer
but
or anything.
He in the red zone needs to get better in the red zone, and in the NFL, that is on the quarterback.
Yeah, primarily, yeah. Right. He absolutely needs to get better, but they also need to execute better.
Sure.
Right? They need to block better. They need to do, there's a lot of things that they need to do, and one of those, as we talked about off the air, might be take away some of those run-pass options and say, look, we're going to run the ball in this particular circumstance. You hate to handcuff your quarterback, though. You know, and that's the thing. If you trust your QB, you let him grow through these things.
In the long run, he has to be able to go to the line with a read-pass option in that situation and be trusted to make the correct call.
Diagnose
and
what he sees.
It sounds like yesterday he got a little too dependent away from the run. So you learn from it and move on.
Right, and which to some degree is understandable when you see their lack of success running it in the red zone. But again, look, Blake needs to play better. But when you say that, you're not, to me, people want all or nothing. Blake's the problem. He's the problem. Blake, get rid of him. That's what it seems like from one end. And the other end is like, oh, Blake is fantastic. Well, no, it's somewhere in the middle.
Right.
He's doing a lot of good things, and he's hurting
on
in a
his
lot of
natural
ways.
Progression. I don't.
Well, he's on his progression, wherever that is destined to end up. We don't know.
Right. But as part of that, this area needs to improve. And that's where he's at.
What time do you have Jaguars.com live today?
12:45 leading into Gus, and it'll be JP Shattuck, Brian Sexton, myself in this same studio kicking you out.
Cyprian today? Did I hear him?
I don't believe on Monday.
Is that not the case?
I don't.
Maybe it's later this week.
I could be wrong on that.
I overheard something.
I'm flying blind.
That's a few good
point.
Minutes.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah.
All right. I'm talking out of turn.
I'm flying blind at this point.
Johnny,
good
to see you.
With my blazer.
We'll see you later.
All right, guys. Thank you.
There he goes, the senior writer from Jaguars.com, Mr. John Osier. Thanks to all of you for tuning in today and expressing your opinions, whether I agree with them or not. It's fine. You know, I get it. But, you know, Tony, it comes down to me. There's no one simple answer to most of anything when it comes to football, never mind life itself.
No.
For goodness sakes. But we keep trying to figure out what the answers are on a week-by-week basis. It's what we're going to do. All right, that does it for us today. For John Osier, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor of Jaguars today. That does it for us. We'll say hello to the boys of XL Primetime. Coming up next on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo! That's great job!